sipping coffee early in the morning, although it's probably like noon in Mississippi.
It is almost 1 p.m. here.
Oh my gosh.
It's almost 1. I didn't wake up until like 11:40.
Oh my gosh.
I had a rough week of not being able to fall asleep. Like there was one night where, I mean, I think you might have seen me post about it on Facebook where at like midnight I randomly got this like urge, like one of those urges that you almost can't resist, to play the piano. I'm not even kidding.
Oh no.
So I
no.
came in here to my studio at midnight and was like, if I don't play the piano, I'm going to be like antsy for the rest of the night. It was this weird compulsion. So, and I sat there and I played the piano for like 2 hours. So 2 a.m.
Oh,
I finally
gosh.
Crawl into bed.
Wow.
And then
and that's like in the middle of the week. So you have to be at work
yeah.
later.
And then like, I just laid there in bed until about 4 a.m. before I finally fell asleep.
Oh no.
So it
well,
was,
I guess, yeah.
Yeah. So it was just, I had like a couple of nights where I didn't fall asleep until like well after midnight. So yeah, today was like my chance to kind of catch up on that. And so yeah, I slept until 11:40.
We traded schedules this week, I guess. You were channeling the schedule that I usually keep because I took the, you know, Monday was my birthday. So I took the entire week off of
right.
work. So I've just been sleeping like a normal person because for those of you that don't know, I work nights.
Yeah.
And or really, really early mornings. And so I was like, you know what, for my birthday, I'm going to take, you know, the week off and an extra day and just like sleep like a normal person and do normal things and actually get to be with my dog at night. And mm-hmm. and like, oh my gosh, it's been so nice. I like remodeled the bathroom and which is just so nice to finally get that done because it was like,
and it looks
wallpapers a bathroom.
It looks so nice too. Like you sent me the video of it and it looks so nice. It actually,
thank you.
Ironically enough, our bathrooms are now the same color, or
oh
almost.
Oh my gosh, I love it. I love almost. It. It's such a great color.
Like, mine is more of like a lighter mint green sort of color, mm-hmm. but yours is a darker green, but they're both green now, which is kind of, it's funny that we both ended up with bathrooms that are green.
I love it. I love it. I have one more to do, but even Ian was like, I'm surprised you don't talk about what you want to do to the other bathroom. And I'm like, because there's so much I want to do to that bathroom, I can't even think about it. It's just
right.
like, it's in a box. It's like in the same realm as the kitchen. It's like, it's a dream. Eventually this will get updated out of
right.
the 70s.
Right. But you're making it through. Like, your house is getting really updated. I mean, you took down all the wallpaper in the kitchen, which
exactly.
was like,
yep.
It had like orange and yellow fruits all over
exactly,
it.
Exactly. Yes.
You know?
It was very farmhouse. So, but that was a pain in the ass to get off. So that's finally gone. Now all the wallpaper in the master bathroom is gone. We call it the little poopy box. It's still the little poopy box, but it's because I was going to paint it brown. But it was also like a bunch of different shades of brown to
right.
begin with. The
yeah.
underneath the wallpaper and stuff, but like it mildewed so badly in there because there's no like bathroom fan.
Oh,
so oh my gosh, it was like, and then Ian's like really allergic to mildew, so he's like, I can't go anywhere near it. I'm like, great, I
right.
have to do the whole thing myself. But it's luckily it's a very small room. And he did do my, he painted the baseboards, he's like caulked everything, he's like, so he's been a big help in other ways and stuff, but oh man, my back hurts.
I bet. I still
so,
really need to paint
yeah.
one of the bedrooms in this house because the previous owners, they had two daughters. And
oh.
so one of the bedrooms is this like dusty rose pink color.
Aww.
And it's like for two little girls with a bunch of white furniture, the pink and white
cute,
looked
yeah.
good together, but it's like, it's now just this bright pink room with like, you know, wood laminate, like dark wood laminate floors, and it just doesn't look great.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I really need to repaint it. I'm thinking gray, but I'm not sure.
Ooh.
And I'd have to paint it myself. So
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see.
I've got one more bedroom to go. One more bedroom to paint. And then the house will, except for, you know, with the exception of the one bathroom, will
right.
have been painted at least. So,
yeah.
And I love colors, so every room in the house is a different color, guys.
Right.
Like, so if you guys can guess what color each room is, maybe they'll be in it. Then there's something in there for you. But we don't always talk about home remodeling on this show. We talk about conspiracies, because I bet you guys are home alone and like are not home alone, but you guys are like all
you're
trapped
all quarantined.
And stuff.
I might even be quarantined this week.
I'm in the military next week too. I might be next week too, and I'm in the news. So.
Like they told us at work yesterday to take home our work computers because we might actually have to work from home and like teleconference in.
Wow.
So yeah.
We might have to too. I might have to remote into my work computer and actually produce TV from the comfort of my own home. What?
I know. Everybody was like, oh, you know, ugh, are you going to be okay? I was like, I'm literally going to sleep in until noon and then get my work done. You know, exactly. If you guys really want me to phone in at 9, I'll phone in, but I'm going right back to sleep.
Exactly. I'll get to get up and just like do my job. It'll be so much less, you know, so much stress. Easier because I'll be at home. And, you know, gosh, I want my productivity to just go through the roof to prove to them that this is the way I should be operating.
Yes.
But yeah. So, hey, we need to shake a penny for our thoughts.
We do. We do. Yes. I think it's my turn to choose.
I think so.
Okay.
Shakey, shakey.
I'm going to go with Tails.
Tails. This time. Okay. It's heads. Ooh. Okay. Cool.
Go well,
like
for it, Tess.
We've been talking about home remodeling because that's where mine got inspired.
Okay.
So I was actually chuckling to myself in the kitchen this morning, and Ian's like, what are you laughing at? And I'm like, I was reminded of the other day when I was scrubbing the floor. I was getting ready to paint and I was scrubbing the floor, and this little daddy long leg spider just comes crawling out from underneath the baseboards and stuff, and it was like huge. And I, in an instinct, so mind you guys, I'm pine sawing the floor, I picked up the spider and with my bare hands, rather than throwing it in the toilet and flushing it, which is right there.
Right.
I threw it into my bucket.
Well, I mean, that's probably kill it as well, but you're not, you're just, your brain isn't function. You're in a rut and you're just kind of like, you know, you're doing stuff and your brain doesn't think logically. Oh my God. You touched it with your bare hands.
I screamed, picked it up and threw it in the bucket. So now I've got a dead spider in my bucket and stuff. So I ended up, you know, I ended up just continuing because at that point I had, you know,
you'd already touched it.
So for your sake, Sammy, thankfully there are no pictures for this one because I didn't even really want to freak myself out with that.
Oh, God. Are you talking about like the eating spider or like the... No. I'm thinking conspiracies. Never mind. I don't know what cryptid this is.
Well, they say that spiders are more afraid of you than you are of them, but that's a damn lie. It's propaganda spread by the silk manufacturing companies to prevent you from smashing their precious little eight-legged egg factories.
Okay.
But to be fair, you know, I did just fight a whole bunch of bugs, so I'm a little biased.
Yeah, a little bit.
And but again, before I get into exactly what we're going to talk about, we're going to continue a little bit because Sammy likes history lessons. So I'm going to pad my episode with a little entomology.
Okay. All right.
So, Sammy, what's the largest spider in the world?
I mean, my brain literally just went to Harry Potter and went.
I was
about to say the Acromantula, which is not real. it's like, isn't it some like Peruvian bird spider or something like that?
You're very close. It's South America's Goliath bird-eating tarantula.
Okay.
And I don't need to say any more about it, but it's real. They're huge. They're ambushers. They're gross, but they're necessary for some reason, so don't kill them.
I don't think a bird-eating spider is necessary, but okay.
Save the bugs, I guess. I don't know. But that kind of gets you in your headspace, right?
Okay. Yes.
But what do you know more about the common spiders in your house? For instance, the daddy long legs that I mentioned earlier.
Well, I mean, daddy long legs, I think, from what I've read, they're technically not spiders. They're in the arachnid family, but they're technically not spiders because they don't have eight eyes or something like that. And their fangs are way too small to even penetrate human skin. So they technically could be venomous, but their fangs are way too small to penetrate human skin, so they can't hurt you. But they're still ucky looking, and I don't like them.
Exactly. So you may have heard that before, about the legend of the daddy longleg spiders having the most potent venom of any spider, but that their fangs are too small or too weak to puncture human skin. That's actually not true. They can.
I hate that.
But they don't bite. They're not the... The same legend is also repeated of the harvestman and the crane fly, which are similar buggies that are also referred to as daddy longlegs. So they're basically, they have wings. wings and they like drag their stupid legs behind them.
Oh, you know. Oh, the mosquito eaters or whatever them. Those are spiders. Exactly.
Those are not technically spiders. They're also like insects because those actually have six legs, but they're the same rumor is kind of said about those in some regions. They're also called daddy long legs in other regions. But yes, they're called flaccid spiders, but it looks like flaccid to me.
flaccid they spiders.
Flaccid spiders, you know, with their flaccid legs. Just you're never going to look at mosquito hawks the same way again. I promise I have a cryptid to get today, guys. Just flaccid spiders.
Okay, I'm okay.
Legs just, you know, flaccid legs just flopping in the breeze.
That's literally okay. That's part of the title. I can't ignore flaccid spiders. So keep going. I'm good. I'm okay.
So yes, the flaccid spiders do have a short fang structure that's also called an uncut due to its hooked shape. They're like hooked.
Right. Okay.
In fact, brown recluse spiders though have the same kind of fangs jaw, and they can pack quite a punch on humans. So it's not that the structure puncture humans. It's just that, you know, daddy long legs are just like, yeah, no, we're cool. Like, just don't smash me. And we're like, smashy anyway.
Brown recluses are no joke. My friend Carly, about 4 or 5 years ago, was bitten by a brown recluse. And I mean, it messed up her leg.
Yeah.
Bad.
It'll take a hole out of you.
Yeah, like, because their venom is corrosive. You know, it's not like a black widow whose venom is paralytic. It's a corrosive agent. And yeah, it ate like a hole in her leg. It was disgusting.
Well, it's also believed that the rumor about daddy long legs comes from their venom, which is not toxic to humans, but it is extremely toxic to other things. So we kind of, you know, humans are like, it's toxic to me if it's toxic to other things. And it's like, it's not actually true. The flaccid uncut is also significantly smaller than that of a brown recluse, and they also have different muscles. Mm-hmm. Like, isn't that kind of strange though, to think of face muscles on a spider?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it makes sense, especially with their mandibles and everything.
They're
makes sense.
Tiny.
Yeah, it's weird, but yeah, it makes sense.
But basically, the brown recluse are hunters, and therefore they're built to bite. Daddy long legs don't really run that way, so they're just flaccid, you know, flopping around, floppy spiders. This one also isn't going to be, this cryptid though, isn't going to be lurking at the end of your street at night, like the black-eyed children, at least if you're not in the Congo or Missouri. Mm-hmm. But grab a blankie and something warm anyway, because we're going to face our fears together and discuss the cryptid that's known as Sheba Fofi.
I've never heard of this before.
So in the Congolese language, it literally translates to the giant spider.
Gross. Okay.
Yeah.
Gross.
And it's essentially what you're picturing. Like, there's no
I'm
even
literally
point.
Picturing the Acromantula from Harry Potter.
Exactly. There's no point in giving you pictures of this because you guys have a really good picture in your head already.
Or the spiders from Lord of the Rings, you know.
Exactly. They've got big old fangs. The grown adults can grow to be about 6 to 8 feet in leg span or about 5 feet tall. So I'm about 5'9". So it's just a little less than a foot shorter than me. I don't like that.
I don't. Nope. I don't like that.
I don't like that at all. They're known for digging shallow tunnels under tree roots and then camouflaging it with a large screen of leaves. They then create an almost invisible web between their burrow and a nearby tree, stringing the whole area with a network of trip lines. Then potential prey are lured into the web and chased toward the center of by the spider, where it's caught and killed. Basically, acts like an out of control trapdoor spider. It's pretty much the same behavior. Mm-hmm. Gross. Gross.
I hate this. I hate everything about
this. Gross. I know. I can tell Sammy's tuning me out because he's just like.
I'm getting like shell shocked. I'm just getting that 1,000-yard stare.
The eggs are pale yellow. Oh, hey, there's eggs.
Gross.
And they're shaped like peanuts, little predatory peanuts.
Gross.
And they're about the size of walnuts, so they're like a pretty good size.
Okay, yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Local natives claim that the hatchlings are bright yellow with a purple abdomen, but they get darker and brown as they mature. They usually feed on birds, antelope, and other small to medium-sized animals, sometimes humans, because, you know, we like to venture into danger.
Mm-hmm.
So where do these things live, though, right? I mentioned
Australia.
The Congo and Missouri, right? Well, inhabitants of the forest of the Congo, deep in there, way in there.
Oh, okay.
That's where they like to live. So
right.
Unless you're in the Congo, or I'm going to tell you part of the Midwest. Apparently one has shown up there. But some peoples of the indigenous tribes of the Congo say that there used to be a lot more common than they are today. There used to be a ton of them. But numbers have since become quite rare due to deforestation and encroaching infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, yeah, there are too many people are squishing the bugs. So they're like dying off.
Good.
But they are on the move. Like I said, in 2013, a man in Missouri, a long way from the Congo, reported to have seen a 5-foot wide creature that he describes as having hairy legs that looked like a spider. Yeah. Gross.
I don't like but this. I really don't like this.
I know. I love it. It's such great torture because I wrote it. So I've already been grossed out.
I bet.
So the first known sighting was by a Western explorer, basically the first time a white guy shot at it, was in the 1890s near Lake Nyasa.
It's always a white guy shooting at it. Yeah, we don't know what that is. Let's shoot first and ask questions later.
Like the indigenous tribes are like, we respect this thing. We don't touch it. We don't go near it. White guys are like, they're just going to cock a gun.
The native tribes are like, listen, this is a giant spider. Let's just avoid it at all costs. White people are like, okay, giant spider, let's shoot at it.
Which, I'm going to find it.
To be fair, I would want to wipe them out of existence.
We'd probably want to wipe them out.
So well, I will join my white heritage and celebrate it in that respect. I would want the giant spiders to be wiped out of existence as well.
I might be on that boat with you. Well, a British missionary named Arthur John Symes, also on that boat with you, and his men ran up on one. The guys got tangled up in one of the massive webs, and they say that two massive spiders, about 2 to 4 feet long, a male and a female, although I'm not sure how they could tell because they came, you know, they're like looking for spider walnuts, I guess.
Dangly bits, I guess.
Little dangly bits. Like, how can you tell when the spider's a male or a female? But okay.
Okay.
Which I'll have another tidbit later on that could be a lifesaver. About telling the difference between male and female.
Okay.
But anyway, they came out of the web and attacked him. Symes escaped after being bitten, but not to worry. He shot at it first. He was like,
good, yes.
That's how he got away. He was shot at it with his pistol. But once home, Symes contracted a fever, took on a deathly pallor, had severe chills and a massive swelling near the bite mark. He became delirious before slipping into a coma and later dying. So the venom is like insane and pretty much took him out anyway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Another early account was relayed by an English couple that was traveling through the region of the jungle in that area. This is actually considered more more popular story of the finding of this thing versus the Symes story. Symes kind of, it popped up later like, oh, hey, you know that guy? I think he died of a spider bite. But R.K. Lloyd and his wife were motoring through the Belgium Congo in 1938. So even 40 years after Symes died, when they saw a large object crossing the trail in front of them, they thought it was a cat or a monkey, but they soon realized it was a spider with legs nearly 3 feet long. So that's like a 6-plus abdomen.
How do they mistake that for a cat?
Big ass spider.
That is giant and massive, and I hate this, but okay. But yeah, how do you mistake that for a cat? Like maybe a monkey. Monkeys get pretty big, but
you know,
cats are like, you know, maybe 2 feet. Total.
To be fair, they're also like pretty deep in there in the jungle. So like, I imagine there's like a lot around there that kind of camouflage this. Oh, God, gross.
Maybe gross.
Big old spider.
I hate this. Okay, keep going.
The famed naturalist and cryptozoologist William J. Gibbons also searched long and hard for a different cryptid, the Congolese dinosaur called the Mokola Mimembe.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But while he was searching for that one, he heard tales of a different beast that closely resembled these giant spiders. He shared his experience on the third, quote, on his third expedition to equatorial Africa. I took the opportunity to inquire if the pygmies knew of such a giant spider. And indeed they did. They spoke of the Shiva Fofi, which is a giant spider or great spider. Mm-hmm. They described a spider that is generally brown in color with a purple mark on the abdomen. They grow in quite an enormous size with a leg span of at least 5 feet. The giant arachnids weave together a layer made of leaves similar to the shape of a traditional pygmy hut and spin a circular web said to be very strong between two trees with a strand stretch across a game trail. Again, describing the behavior of a trapdoor spider.
Right.
However, did you notice that? That they tend to make it in this, like, shape of the house that these people typically live in.
Yeah, that's creepy. That means that it's intelligent enough. It's intelligent enough to learn what its prey lives in.
Exactly. That's
terrifying and gross. Yep. I hate this.
Gibbons was also pretty convinced these things were real, too. He said that even the natives didn't talk it up like it was some mythical boogeyman. They really respected and feared these eight-legged freaks. They were like, there are some things that were like, we worship and we offer, sacrifices to. But then there are things we just do not F with. And that is,
right.
We do not F with these things.
Ugh, okay.
And this is also they talked about it in the same way that native people have talked about pandas and gorillas before the white guy had a chance to shoot at it. I mean, mm-hmm. see yes. it, mm-hmm. which at the time people thought that even those were mythical animals and right. they are in fact in zoos now.
Very real. Yes.
Because they were kind of hard for people to picture at the time.
Right. Of course.
During World War II, an Australian soldier who's used to giant animals trying to kill him. Reported seeing a large web 10 to 15 feet across. Within the web, he saw a puppy-sized spider, which on the one hand, aw, and on the other hand, oh my God.
Yeah.
Puppy-sized spider.
Yep. Nope. I'm not okay with that.
He described it as being all black with a thick body and with hair like a tarantula. So gross. Another sighting around World War II, but not in the jungle, a man named William Sladen said in 1948 he was walking along with his wife and three grandsons to church along Highway 171 in Leesville, Louisiana, when a massive black spider the size of a wash tub scurried across the road in front of them from one ditch to the other. So it's in Missouri. It's in Louisiana. It's
That's
in the Congo.
Near where I live. I don't like this.
There you go. Keep an eye out for him.
Yeah, nope.
I'm going to make you feel a little better, though, because we're into this impossible conclusions of, like, what this could actually be.
Right, okay.
Let's throw some rationalization on this fire. It could be a coconut crab. Of course, crabs are not covered in hair, although some species have tiny hairs in their pinchers. Crabs don't have fangs or venom ducts, and crabs are pretty damn slow. But if you've ever seen a coconut crab, those things are freaky.
Dude, those things are massive.
And they're huge.
Yes, they are massive.
Yeah. So those I could see crabs are just like spiders of the sea, right?
Well, I mean they're actually the crabs, lobsters, they are in the arachnid family. Mm-hmm. So they are technically spiders of the sea.
Exactly.
But boy, howdy, they taste good.
Yeah.
Makes you wonder if giant spiders would taste good.
Exactly, right?
I don't want to try to find out, though.
Tastes like chicken. could you imagine if, like fake meat is really just spider meat?
No. Like fake crab meat, imitation crab is just spider meat.
Gross.
I hate this. Why did you do that, Tess? That's not okay.
I'll still eat it.
I mean, I might, but still. Oh, God, the thought of that.
The only fossil evidence that we have that's close to something like this is the Jaclopterus renanae, which is a giant sea scorpion that lived about 390 million years ago and measured about 8 feet long. Mm-hmm. We had giant sea scorpions, Hi.
Dang, nature, you scary.
Dang, nature. There's a possibility that these things could have been real at one time. It's pretty unlikely that they're real now, that they still exist now.
Right.
In order to grow to that size, more than five times that of the largest known spider on Earth, which is the giant huntsman.
Right, yes.
The respiratory system would be insufficient to sustain a spider of that size. Mm-hmm. So spiders can have two types of lungs. They have book lungs, which revolve from gills and look like the pages of a book. Tarantulas have two sets of book lungs. Or they have trachea tubes, which are located in the posterior end, like breathing through your butthole.
Right. Yep.
These consist of long tubes with small holes in the belly of the spider and travel through the spider's body to let air be absorbed through the skin. And basically, when arachnids did exist at that size, one time, there was a lot more oxygen in the air than there is now. Thus, their systems could handle more. So, just keep a stinky house if you want less spiders, I guess.
Yeah.
if you starve them of oxygen, there's not going to really have anywhere for them to go. But so basically, there's not enough oxygen in our atmosphere anymore for spiders of that size to even be able to survive. Also a freaky detail to think about with this is the exoskeleton would be so huge that it would be incredibly heavy and therefore extremely hard to move. Like those coconut crabs are so big, they're like,
yeah, they move super slowly.
Fast.
Yeah.
And so, therefore, if these things even existed, they wouldn't move like our tiny spiders do. They would lumber around like those big old coconut crabs, so you'd be able to get away pretty easily.
Right, right.
Yeah. But there are a lot of lots of things in this world that we haven't discovered yet, so anything also is possible. So.
Yeah, I hope this isn't, but yes, that is that is true.
Because I imagine that those places in the heart of the Congolese jungle and stuff would, mm-hmm. you know, there's a lot of trees producing oxygen.
Yeah, like, well, right, I mean, there. There are literally still parts of the Congo that are somewhat undiscovered because, you know, the foliage is so thick and the bugs get there, so bad that you can't get in there. So,
exactly.
You know, yeah, it's terrifyingly possible. But I mean, yeah, giant bugs were definitely a thing. I mean, you know, back in like the Cretaceous period, I think mm-hmm. they had... dragonflies that were like 3 or 4 feet long, you
absolutely.
Know, and I mean, they have, you know, fossil evidence of those. So, I mean, yeah, it's definitely very possible, as terrifying as it is. And I hate
exactly.
it, but you know,
exactly. Well, I'll leave you guys with a little food for thought okay. that could save your life. A friend of mine used to be an exterminator in town, and he mm-hmm. taught me how to tell the difference between a male and a female black widow spider.
Right.
So we all know that the ladies look like because they've got, you know, they're pretty common and, you know, for their own reasons, they keep it that way.
Yes.
We know that about the red hourglass shape on their stomach that signals get the F out of here response in your lizard brain.
Yeah. Oh, God, it does, too.
You know?
I just found one in my my garage the other day and I just absolutely got terrified and I pretty much ran out of there screaming. So.
Well, the fellas have their own markings, too. Those guys are typically a lot smaller, and they have an orange or a white hourglass instead of a red one.
Interesting.
And they're also not as lethal as the she-devils. So
okay.
if you happen to see one, they're not as dangerous, but you should obviously get rid of because they're,
right.
you know, you don't want more of the population and stuff. But I thought that was really interesting to look for the orange or the white hourglass on the males. You know what else I think is also even freakier? I feel like... spiders are creepier when they're dead and all curled up.
Oh, yeah, because they just kind of shrivel up and their legs curl in on themselves.
Ooh.
Yeah, they're kind of gross looking.
Freaky. I feel like that's freakier than when they're, like, moving around, although you can, like, lose them when they're moving around. But anyway, that's my cryptid, the giant spider. Are they real? Are they not? Were they once? Are they now? Let's decide.
Let's just hope that this is nothing more than fairy tale and legend. You know, made to scare children and stay inside and don't get too far from home.
Exactly.
Because I really don't want to believe that these are or ever have been real.
Hopefully it's just a hunting tale that we don't have to worry about.
Yes. But
so,
okay.
Shall we take a break?
Let's take a break.
Sammy's going to go take a shower and get all the bugs off of him.
Right? Yeah, because I'm literally itching over here because I'm like, oh, I feel them, but they're not there. But okay, we'll be back. Okay, so I didn't take a shower. I think I'm okay. I just, you know, I paced around my house a bit, but, you know, I'm okay. I'll be okay
Did
as
you go
long
smash
as I don't
some
have
bugs?
To think about this for a long time.
You'll have to think about it all day today while you edit
I'm not going to. Well,
you are.
Yeah.
You have
I'll just, you know, I just won't edit your half of the episode. I will literally just... cut
Thanks.
It out
Thanks.
And leave it just the way it is with zero editing. So if you hear
we'll do it live, we'll do it
so
live.
So if you guys hear every background noise and every sound, it's because I couldn't bear to listen to that again. But oh, speaking of me editing things, did you catch that one episode where I actually edited it to go back and forth between I'm over here. No, I'm over here. No, I'm over here. Oh. I actually managed to do that.
He's so proud.
So you're welcome, everybody.
Guys.
I actually, that took some time, but I did it.
He did. They put the extra mile. Give him a round of applause.
Yes. Thank you. You're welcome. I'd like to thank the Academy. But anyway, so. Okay, so my topic is one that we've joked about quite a few times, but I've always kind of shied away from talking about it, but no more. I'm going to do it, and I wanted to talk about it, especially since it has actually been somewhat relevant in the like last couple of months and in 2020. And it's my season to talk about conspiracy theories, so I'm going to do what I want. So let's talk about the Flat Earth conspiracy.
Ooh, great. I was leaving that one for you.
Okay, so what is it? Plain and simple, it's the belief that Earth is not a sphere or globular, but it is in fact flat, like people believed thousands and thousands of years ago. So that's the plain and simple setup of what it is. So So that sets me up for a history lesson behind the original belief in a flat Earth. And then the subsequent scientific discoveries that led us to realize that it's not flat, it's spherical. And to think otherwise is malarkey.
Hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, so, that's true. That's yes. very true.
So this is not one of those theories where I'm going to say, maybe it's real. Mm. This is one of those ones where if you believe in flat Earth, I'm sorry, but you're probably going to get shamed right now.
And yep.
I don't normally shame people with my conspiracy theories, but this one I'm going to shame you.
Just too much evidence against you.
Yeah. But anyway, belief in the flat Earth was a part of most major societies throughout history, with documented belief existing in Egypt, Greece, Europe, Israel, and China. Now, most of these civilizations figured out the Earth was spherical around the 6th to 8th centuries BC.
Wow.
With the earliest idea of a spherical Earth came from Greek philosopher Pythagoras, you know, of the Pythagorean mm-hmm. theorem from math, which I had to, that came up from, you know, my tortured past of not doing well in math in high school. It was like, oh my God, not him.
They said you would use it again one day. They just didn't say how.
But so yeah, the earliest idea came from him in the 6th century BC. However, the like major society that didn't accept it the longest was China, who didn't accept this scientific fact until Western astronomy was introduced to them in the 17th century.
Mm.
So yeah, so China actually believed in a flat Earth well into the 17th century.
Wow.
But everybody else figured it out before, you know, like BC. So
yeah, wow. So they'd been already studying the skies and like, hey, that star's different than it was yesterday. But yeah, interesting.
Now, one thing that I was extremely shocked to learn during my research is that no one in the Middle Ages believed the Earth was flat, which is something that I grew up thinking, and if I remember correctly, was taught to me in school.
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but do you remember learning that one of the reasons Christopher Columbus had trouble getting funding was that people were worried he'd fall off the edge of the Earth if he traveled too far?
In fact, I think that was even in a Wishbone episode.
I feel like I was taught that in school. Well, that was a fabrication.
Interesting.
That was invented in 1828.
Oh, wow. They were just we're just going to toss that in the history book just because we feel like it.
Oh, I'm going to get into it. So in his extremely romanticized novel, A History of the Life and Voyages of Christopher Columbus, Washington Irving described that when Columbus proposed his journey to Spanish sovereigns, they rejected it because they ignorantly believed the Earth was flat. However, this is extremely inaccurate, with the majority of society, save for a few stragglers, widely believed in a spherical Earth for centuries. This book was mistaken by many as an accurate and scholarly work and has misled so many that it's actually taught in school now.
Interesting. Because I mean, I imagine Columbus is just like, guys, I'm a white guy. You're a white. I'm gonna go shoot at it. Just
right.
Like, let just me go. I'm gonna go shoot. Even if it's the end of the world, I'm gonna go shoot at it.
Problem yeah, solved. So nobody at that time thought the world was flat.
Interesting.
Except for probably, so just, you know, a few outlying stragglers or something like that. But yeah,
just so the guy trying to sell books is like, you know what? I'm gonna. Add my little commentary on there.
Yeah. So actually, the problem that arose with Columbus's journey, aside from the problems that we know and have talked about multiple times on this podcast.
Yeah.
It wasn't that the Earth was flat, but it arose from the fact that Columbus misjudged the size of the planet.
Oh, I would expect that at the time.
Yeah. So he actually believed in outdated projections, which resulted in his estimates of how long it would take his journey. His estimates were 25% too small.
Oh.
So the criticism and pushback came from scholars at the time arguing with him about his projections being way too small, not from them believing in a flat Earth. So basically all the pushback was like, No, your projections are like 25% too small. The Earth is a much bigger and it's going to take you a lot longer. So we're not going to give you funding until you update your projections.
Interesting. So they're like, your math is wrong, man. You got to come. Interesting. I never knew that.
I didn't either. So yeah, that was why he got pushback, not because people believed in a flat Earth.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was something I learned and thought was really interesting. So hopefully you've all learned something like that. If you guys were taught in school that Columbus, you know, was, they were worried he was going to sail off the edge of the earth, please like shoot us a message or a tweet or something like that. So I'm not just crazy, because I'm like 90% sure that I was actually taught that in school.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so too. Cool.
Okay. So that's a little bit of like the history behind the flat earth mindset, but the theory of it is a little bit different. So, despite the theory having like a major and unfortunate resurgence in the last 10 years, it's actually been around for a while. Modern belief in flat earth theory comes from a man named Samuel Rowbotham in the mid 1800s. Rowbotham, under the pseudonym Parallax, wrote a pamphlet entitled Zetetic Astronomy in 1849, and another not long afterwards called The Inconsistency of Modern Astronomy and Its Opposition to the Scripture, where he argued in favor of the flat earth theory using experiments he'd done on the curvature of water in a long distance drainage ditch, as well as claiming that ships disappearing over the horizon had more to do with the human eye's perspective than the actual curvature of the earth. Basically, he just said human eye can't see that far. It's not like it's going over the earth. It's just, we can't perceive that far.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Huh.
So, and then in 1885, a man named William Carpenter, who was a supporter of Rowbotham, published a book, 100 Proofs the Earth is Not a Globe. In it, he
100 of them. My goodness.
100 proofs. Yes. In it, he used rivers as one of his main ways to prove that the earth is flat. You know, a lot of the flat earthers use water as a way to prove that the earth is flat. So in it, he said, there are rivers that flow for hundreds of miles towards the level of the sea without falling more than a few feet, notably the Nile, which in 1,000 miles falls but a foot. A level expanse of this extent is quite incompatible with the idea of the earth's convexity. Yes. It is therefore a reasonable proof that the earth is not a globe. And then he also said, if the earth were a globe, a small model globe would be the very best, because the truest thing for the navigator to take to sea with him. But such a thing as that is not known. With such a toy as a guide, the mariner would wreck his ship of a certainty. There is a proof that the earth is not a globe. So he just had a lot of opinions as to why the earth is not a globe.
Interesting. So proofs are opinions. Ah, we've been hearing that for a long time.
I mean, we still kind of hear that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, opinionated proof.
Yes. That's just like your opinion, man.
Let me speak my truth.
Yeah. You're entitled to your opinion, but I'm entitled to my opinion about your opinion.
Right. Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, going further, a man named John Jasper, who was an African-American slave-turned-preacher, used biblical scriptures in order to back his belief that the earth was flat. In his famous sermon, The Sun Do Move, he quoted the book of Revelation, chapter 7, verse 1, where it says, I saw four angels standing on the four corners of the earth. He claimed that if God says it was a four-cornered earth, then there is no way that it could be round, because circles don't have corners. So that was
okay.
That was his belief. And a lot of, you know, like religious fanatics have used things like that as a way to prove that the earth is flat.
Interesting. You know, if you draw a pentagram in the middle, there are plenty of corners in that circle.
I guess. Yeah, let's. You're right. I don't think I mentioned Satanism in this. So let's throw that in there.
Let's throw it in there. It's just there's part of it.
Put Illuminati. A pentagram in the middle and then there's corners. Okay. Okay, so after Rowbotham's death, a woman named Lady Elizabeth Blount established a Universal Zetetic Society in 1883, or was it 1893? It has to be 1893, and I just got dyslexic with my numbers. I'm pretty sure it was 1893, whose objective was the propagation of knowledge related to natural cosmogony in confirmation of the Holy Scriptures based on practical scientific investigation. The society published a magazine called The Earth, Not a Globe Review. which is not a great title. It's not very catchy. The Earth Not a Globe Review.
A lot of their titles are a little like, the sun do move.
They're either like grammatically incorrect or kind of wordy.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of them kind of remind me of like Leslie Knope, like headlines for a newspaper where she just kind of rambles on and on and on and hits all her talking points in one headline.
Exactly.
So this magazine remained active well into the 20th century. She personally believed that the Bible was the unquestionable authority on the natural world and argued that one could not be a Christian and believe that the earth is a globe. So, yeah. So she basically said, you know, the Bible states that the earth is flat. And if you're a Christian, you have to believe that the earth is flat. If you believe in the earth being a globe, you're not a good Christian.
Interesting.
Right,
why do they always use that as leverage? Like you're not
a good Christian if you don't believe everything I believe.
It's like the last ditch effort to get people on your side,
right? Let's guilt them into believing what I believe.
Okay,
let's use spiritual leverage as a way to guilt people into believing in my weird pseudoscience cult.
That's what a lot of things come down to.
Right. I mean, oh my God. I wish we talked about cults on this because, oh my God, I do love me some good cults.
Some good cults.
They're really interesting.
I hope not.
Well, I mean, I don't love them in, you know, the way that I would like to be a part of them, but they're fascinating to me. They're
Sammy
absolutely
Rainer,
fascinating.
Big fan of Kool-Aid.
Big fan of the Kool-Aid. No. I've mentioned it before and I'll mention it again. If I was ever to be a part of a cult, it would probably be that cult from like the 90s that believed in the aliens in the Hale-Bopp comet.
Yep.
I don't remember what they're called though. But you know, they believed the aliens were gonna they had a mass suicide pact to like
the Kool-Aid people. Yeah.
No, the Kool-Aid people were in Waco.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. The Hale-Bopp Society or Heaven's Gate. That's what it was.
Yeah, you're right.
They believed that aliens were in the tail of the Hale-Bopp comet and they had to kill themselves so that their spirits could ascend to the spaceship to be taken into outer space. As somebody who really loves aliens in the X-Files, had I been old enough at the time, I feel like that is the cult that I most likely would have wound up in.
People need to believe in something.
I just find cults fascinating, but we don't talk about them, but sometimes I wish we did because they are really, they're creepy interesting to me.
It's true.
You know?
It's true.
Anyway, back into Flat Earth.
More.
Which honestly, I didn't write this in here, but a fun fact is that, I think somebody went to one of these like Flat Earth, conventions and used like a ticker of determining whether something is a cult or not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like there are checklists that you can go down to check if something meets the criteria of being a cult, and they ticked off every box.
Oh no.
Right?
Oh no.
So that's a little fun fact, the cult of the Flat Earth.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Anyway, so from 1915 to 1942, and these numbers are accurate. I did not get dyslexic with these ones. From 1915 to 1942, a sect of the Christian Catholic Church with a utopian community in Zion, Illinois, not only preached a flat earth doctrine, but banned schools from teaching about a globular earth. When the airship Italia disappeared on an expedition to the North Pole in 1928, the leader of this sect of the church, which this is a cult, he warned the world's press that it had sailed over the edge of the world, and he offered a $5,000 award for proving the earth is not flat under his own conditions. I don't know what those conditions were. I couldn't find them.
He's just like, these are the criteria that you can prove to me that the earth is
round or anything other than flat.
Interesting. Yep.
$5,000 award.
I'll take it because I got a lot of evidence.
I've got so much proof. Now, granted, you have to remember that this was before like real space travel and anything.
True.
You know, so we didn't have, I mean, we still had lots of proof, but we just didn't have the sheer amount of like photographic evidence that we do now.
Yeah.
So then in 1956, a man named Samuel Shenton set up the successor to the Universal Zetetic Society, known as the International Flat Earth Research Society, or as we all know it, the Flat Earth Society.
Mm.
So that was established in 1956.
Wow.
Yeah. Shenton was, to put it nicely, a unique person.
I like unique people. I don't like unique people that start cults, but unique people are good. They're good to have in the world.
This is going to get a little interesting.
Uh-oh.
So prior to his belief in the flat earth theory, he actually did believe in a globular earth. In fact, in the 1920s, when he was in his early 20s, he claimed to have invented an idea that would make use of the earth's rotation for travel.
Hmm.
I'm sorry. This is just, it's so stupid. And I forgot, I'd like kind of forgotten about this. His invention involved raising an airship into the sky and then holding it stationary. After a few hours of the Earth's rotation, which is about 620 miles per hour or 1,000 kilometers per hour, the airship would be over America. It could then be lowered, making transatlantic transport extremely fast and cheap in one direction only.
I mean, I see where he was going.
Yeah, but
but I don't know how he planned to get, like...
But anyway, so upon learning that this wasn't possible,
yeah,
instead of coming to the logical conclusion that the atmosphere rotates with the Earth, he instead decided that it must be because the Earth doesn't rotate at all.
Oy. 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 Yeah, just give him a gold star just to make him feel better. Because, oh, God, man. Like, I mean, early science, we have to admit early science, but you, like...
This isn't early, this is the 1900s.
It's still, we're still fighting the leftovers from this.
Like, I know. So it wasn't long after this, during his research, that he came across Parallax's Zetetic pamphlet and was an immediate convert. Like, it took no time at all. He was just like, that makes perfect sense.
Perfect sense.
And he went so far as to say that the authorities were concealing the fact that the Earth is flat.
Oh, my. Oh, my.
I mean, literally, he picked up the pamphlet and goes, wow, okay, this is
guy,
it.
This is it.
So, yeah. And part of the reason he found this pamphlet was because Lady Elizabeth Blount, who we mentioned earlier, had also come up with the idea of raising an airship into the air and just stopping it. Because he thought, why has nobody invented this form of travel before? And during his research, he found Lady Elizabeth Blount, who had also come up with that idea, and found out it couldn't happen. And she came to the same conclusion. Oh, the Earth must not rotate then. It must be flat.
She's out there with her pamphlets like those guys out on the Las Vegas Strip, like, you know.
So ladies, two people throughout history have come up with the idea of, let's make travel faster in one direction by just holding an airplane in the air stationary
and let the earth spin around,
let the earth spin underneath it. Yes. Two people. So if you ever hear one of your friends talking about this would be a great way for travel, please steer them in the right direction, because they're not going to figure it out on their own, apparently.
They need some kind of steering. Someone has to steer.
Somebody has to steer. You have to tell them that the atmosphere rotates with the Earth, because they won't figure it out on their own. Nope. Their mind is immediately going to go to, the Earth just doesn't rotate because it's
rotate.
Flat.
Yep. That's where it's just like a coin. Just,
yes. So yep. If you ever hear one of your friends come up with this form of travel, please help them.
Please help them. Just help. Help.
Just help.
Oh, boy.
Just help them. Okay, so after his death in 1971, a man named Charles K. Johnson inherited the society from Shenton. That didn't make sense. So Shenton died in 1971, and Charles K. Johnson inherited the society from him.
Johnson.
And under, yeah, and under his leadership, it grew up to about 3,500 people, according to his reports.
Oh.
Yeah. He charged yearly membership dues that started out at $6 a year, which isn't much. And towards like the end of it, it grew up to $10 a year.
Wow.
So with, you know, 3,500 people, that's, you know, $35,000 a year.
You know how many African kids that could feed? They could eat on like $2 a day. And you're like $2 a month for, you know.
Are we queuing up Sarah McLachlan again?
Are.
Because we can.
We are. Without getting sued.
Right. Anyway, so he used these funds to publish tabloids. With the most famous of them being a four-page tabloid named The Flat Earth News, which that has a lot more of a ring to it than these other titles that we've had. It's short, sweet, and to the point. Flat Earth News.
Finally, they got it.
Yeah, they finally got it. Probably why he got 3,500 people to believe in him, because he was a little bit more competent.
Exactly.
A lot more, just a bit. He still believed in the Flat Earth, so not very competent, but competent enough to come with a catchy headline.
Yeah.
So, in these tabloids, he cited the Bible as the basis for his belief and claimed that he believed scientists were working together in order to pull off a mass hoax in order to replace religion with science, which sounds very similar to the people who are against like global climate change.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, scientists are trying to replace religion with science. You know,
like, no, they can coexist.
They can coexist very happily if you do it right. Mm-hmm. So the most current model for the flat Earth that the society has put out is from the late 70s and depicts the Earth as a flat disc, not like a flat square or rectangle, but a flat disc with the North Pole in the center and a instead of Antarctica being a continent, it is instead a 150 foot tall or 45 meter tall ring or wall of ice around the outer edge that prevents people from falling off. A natural firewall or ice wall, if you will.
Be right back. Gonna go run into Antarctica.
Oh, no, you can't.
Oh.
And I'll get into that.
Dang it.
Yep. You can't do that.
Why?
I will get into it. So in this model, the sun and the moon are each only 32 miles or 50 kilometers in diameter because they look about the same size.
Right, right. Because they're
they figured out that, you know, since they're roughly the same size,
I wonder how many people it took to eyeball the sun.
They've done the math. Well, if you put on about four or five pairs of sunglasses on top of each other, you can stare directly at the sun. How do I know this? Because that's how I watched the eclipse a few years
ago.
Nice. The society's numbers dwindled in the 1990s after a fire at Johnson's house, which destroyed all records and member contact information. And then even further after Johnson's death in 2001. And then after that, the Flat Earth Society kind of laid dormant for about 3 or 4 years until it was resurrected by a man named Daniel Shenton, which is no relation at all to
Liar.
Samuel Shenton, surprisingly.
Liar.
I don't believe that either. That's a very unique name.
Oh,
that is a very
God.
Unique name. But apparently there really is no sort of relation at all.
Wow. I got the same name. I'm just going to idolize this guy. Like,
right?
Whatever.
I mean,
oh,
just
my God.
That weird coincidence.
That's
but
super weird.
Anyway, so Daniel Shenton in 2004 resurrected the society as a web forum, which then led to its official relaunch in October of 2009. As of this recording, the most recent officially registered member is from 2016 and was member number 555.
Oh.
So as far as official members go, there's less than 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
But from what we've seen on the internet, there are plenty of people probably not registered who believe in this.
They just don't pay their dues. They're like, society. I just don't pay my dues.
Yeah, they just haven't officially registered or whatever. But as far as officially registered members, there's 555 of them. And the last registered member was from 4 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So Now, thanks to the internet era, we are all very interconnected and can share our views more easily and find like-minded people much easier than ever before. And it's because of this that we've seen a mass resurgence in the flat earth theory in our lifetime. So, most flat earthers believe that the earth is disc shaped, as mentioned earlier, while others believe it to be diamond shaped. I didn't find much information on the diamond shape. Most, if not all, flat earth believers don't believe in outer space. And if they do, almost none of them believe that humans have ever been there. So, yeah. So like the majority of flat earthers don't believe in outer space. And even if they do, almost no flat earthers believe that humans have been to the moon or been orbiting in space or anything like that. So this kind of ties in with like the moon landing conspiracy theory. Yeah. You know, they don't believe that humans have ever been outside of our planet.
How weird.
Right.
How weird.
So now I know to a lot of us, it may seem like the people who believe this theory are simply using it as a way to kind of troll everyone on the internet.
Yeah, that's what I've thought too.
However, in 2018, so just 2 years ago, a clinical neurologist named Stephen Novella stated that he thinks the believers are sincere in their beliefs and aren't just saying this to wind us up. Like just from his knowledge of neurology and psychology and stuff like that, he says, no, these people are very sincere in their beliefs. They're not just making this up to rile people up. Though I'm sure there are some people who are.
There's always some.
So where is the conspiracy in all of this, right? I know a lot of this has been history, and then, you know, like the foundation for the conspiracy. But yeah, like why do all these people believe in a flat earth despite the scientific proof that it's not flat? According to modern flat earthers, they claim that NASA and other government agencies are conspiring to delude the public into believing the Earth is spherical so that NASA can use super soldiers to guard the Antarctic ice wall that surrounds Earth from outsiders seeing it. So that's why you can't just head down there. There are NASA super soldiers guarding the ice wall.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
I see.
Yes. As far as what lies beyond the ice wall, the Flat Earth Society says beyond the 150-foot ice wall is anyone's guess. How far the ice extends, how it terminates, and what exists beyond it are questions to which no present human experience can reply. All we at present know is that snow and hail, howling winds, and indescribable storms and hurricanes prevail, and that in every direction, human ingress is barred by unsealed escarpments of perpetual ice.
I don't think these people get out very much.
No. It goes on to say, extending farther than eye or telescope can penetrate and becoming lost in gloom and darkness, some hold that the tundra of ice and snow stretches forever eternally.
Like, holy cow. I want to tell these people to read a book, but I feel like they read way too much.
They obviously do.
Read some nonfiction.
Now, for this conspiracy to be true, it would literally need the backing of every major government in the world.
Yeah.
Every government space program, every nation, every scientist, every world leader. It would need way too much coordination.
Way too much. Just like the chemtrails, like way too much coordination.
Either that, or it would need the coordination of heavily influential people or organizations to be able to convince everybody under them that this is real. And this is where it actually ties into like the New World Order and the Illuminati.
The lizard
basically,
people.
Yeah, basically saying that they're the ones that know about the flat earth, and according to the theories, they keep everybody in check about a lot of things. And this is just one of the things that they keep in check, is the knowledge of flat earth.
Interesting.
So yes, I can't wait to talk about the New World Order at some point.
Yeah.
That might have to be an episode that we both talk about the conspiracy and we just kind of spend an hour just talking about that one topic.
I got to finish that book you got me that's like all about it.
Right.
And all that good stuff. Like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. So that might have to be an episode, like a special episode where we literally just talk for an hour
about
that.
The New World Order. Yeah.
Because it's so intricate and so in depth.
Definitely.
But so I'm going to go into two more little sections. I'm going to talk about arguments for the flat earth, as well as notable attempts to prove the flat earth.
Okay.
So there's four arguments for the flat earth. One is that roads are flat.
Oh.
Two is that water is always level. Three is that star trail photos prove the earth doesn't move, which I don't know if you've seen star trail photos, but they're, I can't think of the word, but basically it's
long
like
exposure.
Long exposure. Yeah. There you go. Of, you know, stars. And if you look at them, mm-hmm. they kind of go in a circle
mm-hmm.
and they don't seem to like go out of view. Mm. They kind of just sit there in a circle spin around on their axis. So some people are saying, hey, that's proof that the earth stays flat and everything spins around us.
Interesting.
And then the fourth is that the horizon is always at eye level, you know,
uh-huh.
which once again, that goes into the, I can't see that far. Mm-hmm. And that's why.
Interesting.
So, as far as notable attempts to prove the flat earth, I'm only going to talk about one person.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where it comes into relevance for this year. His first attempt in March 2018, American limousine driver and stuntman Mike Hughes built a homemade rocket in order to launch himself up high enough to prove the earth was flat himself. Using about $20,000 in scrap metal and his mobile home as a makeshift launch pad, he managed to launch himself 1,875 feet or 572 meters into the air before the rockets failed and he had to eject and parachute to the ground. He was not seriously injured and went on to say that more evidence for his beliefs would come with larger rockets.
Mm.
Then last month in like February of 2020, February 22nd of 2020. So literally less than a month ago.
Yeah.
He was once again, and this is kind of why I wanted to talk about it, is because it's so relevant.
It really is.
He was once again took to the skies in his steam-powered rocket, which that sounds like a great name for a band. Yeah, like
steam-powered
a folk
rocket.
Like a folk indie band, yeah. Steam-powered rocket. Because, I mean, you've already got, like, steam-powered giraffe.
Exactly.
But I feel like steam-powered rocket would be another great, like, maybe indie synth wave band.
Agreed.
Folk synth wave.
Yeah. Folk synth wave. Anyway. Steam-powered rocket.
Somebody invent that genre of music, and we're going to trademark that. Folk synth wave. However, this time the parachute apparatus malfunctioned and Hughes was unable to eject. The rocket fell several hundred feet and Hughes was killed on impact.
Oh, he plummeted. Oh, he I saw the video, unedited video. Like,
yeah, it was
and
not
that
good.
Parachute was like shredded before he even got out of the, like,
and that was the thing is that it malfunctioned, the parachute ejected and got torn and he was unable to eject. And it was just kind of flapping there in the breeze. Mm. Oh, it was awful. In later interviews, his public relations representative stated, "We used the flat earth as a PR stunt. Flat earth allowed us to get so much publicity that we kept going. I know for a fact that he did not believe in the flat earth and it was just a shtick."
Wow.
So his PR rep is saying, "Oh no, that wasn't real." But I kind of think it was because I feel like anybody crazy enough to launch themselves into the air in a steam powered rocket was probably also crazy enough to believe in the flat earth. And I feel like this PR person representative is just trying to save face and make him not look as crazy.
Like that tends to be the defense in a lot of these things. Like, I mean, they called out Alex Jones and he was like, no. His lawyer was like, no, that's just an act. He doesn't really believe any of that. It's just an act for viewers and stuff. And so I'm like, why is it always the defense after the guy is like obviously called out or dead or like, they're like, oh no, he didn't really believe that. When, you know, Alex Jones has a way to be, you know, to come back and say yes or no, but you know, Mike Hughes, he's dead. Like we can't confirm that. So, tragedy to kill, like obviously these like conspiracies and lies, they obviously kill people.
Yeah.
But, you know, at the same time, it's like, you know, Darwinism is a thing.
It really is. The Darwin Awards every year. Like I would not be surprised if Hughes shows up in this year's Darwin Awards.
Yeah.
Would not be surprised
at all. Surprised.
But anyway, the earth is round, you guys.
Yeah, it's round. It's round, guys.
I really should not have to say that in 2020. Yeah. I really shouldn't. Yeah.
I actually have a really cool collection. I'll post some pictures of it tomorrow or one of these days and stuff. I have a couple of globes. One of them is made out of, the surface is all different, like, types of minerals. I don't know if they're actually from the places that, like, are like, there's like,
I've seen those kind of globes before.
Abalone, one spot is like, you know, and like all the countries are different types of rocks and stuff. And then my other globe I've actually had since I was a kid. It's so old. It still has the USSR.
The USSR.
On it.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yeah.
But yeah. So yeah, Earth is round.
Yeah.
This is why we don't have flying cars and why aliens won't talk to us is because people still believe in a flat Earth. Yeah. So if you really want aliens to come find us and actually interact with us, start being intelligent people.
Like, you know, start being hard. People worth wanting to talk to.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, stop hoarding toilet paper.
Yeah. Guys, come on. Runny nose, not runny butt. Like, I get it. You're afraid of being quarantined. You're afraid of not being able to get, you know, toilet paper, or you want to sell it to your friends. Whatever your reason is, take a shower. Just you will. There's plenty. There's plenty to go around. Like, oh God, I went on a rant. I do not need massive amounts of toilet paper or paper towels. I just need paper towels.
Yeah, I need
because
the normal
I need
amount
to
of something.
Live. And I went on a rant in the aisle yesterday. This poor woman, like, down the aisle from me. Because on top of that, Target even put out a 20% off discount for toilet paper and those kinds of paper goods. I swear to God, they did this on purpose. Talk about conspiracies. Like,
right. Oh, I have a lot of belief. Don't get me started about what I, like, since we're literally now getting paid to think about conspiracy theories, that's what my brain is going to. And I have a lot of beliefs on the conspiracies behind the coronavirus. So don't get me started, because this episode will go on way too long.
We're not going to go into that. All I'm going to say though, guys, is just wash your hands.
Don't
shake hands. You know, touch elbows if you need to and stuff, but like just social distancing. Like, just like with any sickness, it doesn't, you know, the flu doesn't need to spread like it has and stuff. We can be more careful about, you know, who we
just
interact with and how. Just wash your hands. Just wash your gosh darn hands, guys. You're nasty.
Just be mindful. Be mindful and be hygienic. It's not that hard.
And scrub your phone while you're at it, too. Not just
in
your fingerprints.
Your kids.
Just like vaccinate your crotch goblins, too. Like, jeez. This has been another episode of Conspiracies and Cryptids with Sammy and Tessa, where we tell you guys how to be functioning human beings.
This is another episode of Sammy and Tessa's soapbox.
Yes. Yes, where we polish off the last couple minutes with just telling you guys how to live. All right, guys.
All right.
Yep, because remember, you know, that there are always people and governments that are keeping an eye on you. In other words,
Big Brother is watching.
Thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Conspiracies and Cryptids with Sammy and Tessa. Don't forget to check out our website, www.conspiriesandcryptids.com, for more episodes and other information.
And if you're really enjoying what we're doing, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/cryptipod. That's CRYPTIPOD. There you can find different ways to support us and get some awesome goodies along the way.
While you're at it, you can also find us on all of your favorite social media platforms like Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. That's any one of those at Cryptopod.
And if you're enjoying our podcast, please think about leaving us a 5-star review on iTunes. Leave us 5 stars and a nice little blurb about why you like us. It helps us to gain some traction and find some new listeners.
And while you're at it, don't forget to tell your friends, because our friends are your friends.
And don't forget, Big Brother is watching.